This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Looking for answers about someone and you've hit a dead end? There's an online tool that can help you locate almost anyone within minutes. Confidentially search millions of public records by phone number, address, name, or email to find out more information about people in your life. Go to truthfinder.com to locate almost anyone now.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herrington deal. Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Don't Play That Song by Aretha Franklin. One of my favorite Aretha records, a cover of, I think, a Benny King song from her early 70s album, Spirit in the Dark. Aretha Franklin, born on this day in 1942.
The nice thing is I'm looking at the ESPN right now, and the TV's on. I don't know what Stephen A. Smith's talking about something, but the topic is how much trouble are the Lakers in right now? That's good to see. I'll get to that in a minute. Grizzlies in some trouble because Ja Morant not playing tonight. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the Grizzlies are on the road right now. I am not on the road with them. Drew's not on the road. I don't know if anyone is. If Taylor Jenkins has talked about this in more detail, I haven't seen it anywhere. So to me, the real mystery or the question with the Morant stuff is how much of it is like a real injury concern that might, you know, potentially keep him out of playoff basketball, and how much of this is the Grizzlies are putting him in, or basically shrink wrapping him in order to not risk not having him available for playoff basketball, right? And so that's sort of the question. I assume it's more the latter. That, you know, a hamstring thing is a thing that can get worse, not get better, and you want to be extremely cautious with that. And also, at this point, like, you know, trying to have guys healthy for the playoffs is probably more important than anything. So when you can get there and you're trying to thread that, we saw what happened with Brandon Clark. So given Ja's injury history this year, I would assume they're going to be super cautious with him in order to have him healthy when the playoffs get here. But the team hasn't really spoken to that, so there's a lot of uncertainty there.
Yeah, like it's funny, Jeffrey. I was talking to Jeffrey. I said, so what do you think Chris and I should talk about? He said, well, you could ask him the over under on how many games. But the problem is we have no idea how many. It would be literally based on nothing, right? Like a guess at how many games Ja will play of the remaining 11 for you, for me, for whatever, anyone who's whatever. It would be
Assuming he can play in the playoffs, and that is my assumption until someone says otherwise. Assuming he can go in the playoffs, I don't think they would keep him wrapped up until you get there. And so I assume we'll see him again in the regular season if we're going to see him in the playoffs, and I assume we will. But, again, the team hasn't really spoken to that, so it's really blind guesswork.
Right. Yeah, I mean, at some point, there does become a level of urgency that why save him for a playoffs if you're not going to make the playoffs? I mean, I don't know when we reach that point that you're like, okay, we would if we knew we were making the playoffs, we would continue to shrink wrap him, but given that there's some question as to whether we're not, I think maybe we should run them out there.
Yeah, but they're still closer to third than they are to six. You know, we talked about this yesterday. Everyone is just assuming the Grizzlies are unraveling. Like, look around. Like, every team between 2 and 9 in the West lost the last game they played. The Lakers have been worse over the last 10 games than the Grizzlies have. You know, the Nuggets lost last night to the Bulls. The Lakers lost last night. The Wolves lost last night. And so, again, I'm not saying it's a certainty the Grizzlies are going to stay in the top six, but I think it's a better than 50-50 proposition, even without Ja.
Yeah. I guess there was no question. It was clearly a promising night. It was a very happy development last night when the Pacers beat Minnesota, the Magic beat the Lakers. Hell, the Bulls beat the Nuggets, and if you care about it, the Celts beat the Kings. Here's the only my only concern is that if you look down rather than up, right? You then have Golden State, which has won 8 out of 10, and the Clippers that have won 8 out of 10. And if they both catch, if Golden State stays at 6, whatever, stays above the line, and the Clippers catch you, you've been caught.
It is possible the Grizzlies move down. It is also possible the Grizzlies move up.
It is possible.
It is very possible the Grizzlies stay right where they are. That's probably the most possible of all.
Yes. Yes. No. And I feel pretty good about Minnesota because really it's effectively after their loss last night, it's a 4-game cushion with 11 to go. That seems pretty good. I'll be honest. I'm a little worried with the Clippers. I'm a little worried about the Clippers. Now the Clippers got the Knicks tomorrow. They will clearly lose some games. So that's it. Your level, even if you knew the Grizzlies, if Ja wasn't going to play any of these 11 games and you had to bet $100 on whether they'll make the playoffs, not the play-in, you would still say yes, playoffs, not the play-in? No Ja for the next 11?
You can still make the playoffs when you're in the play-in, but if you finish in the top six.
Say top six, yeah.
I would put it above 50%, but like only slightly.
Right.
You know, I think you're in your coin flip territory there.
Right. All right, Jimmy Butler, by the way, makes his return tonight to Miami. Have you studied what's happened there in Golden State? He's obviously been a huge asset, and it suggests he would have been a huge asset in Memphis, although that was never realistic for the financial and other reasons that we discussed. What's been the impact of Jimmy Butler in Golden State?
Yeah, I know. I think, I mean, the prerequisite there is Stephen Curry.
Right.
And so, like, Jimmy Butler doesn't mean that much if you don't have Curry out there. But when you add him to Curry and you give that second creator who also plays on the defensive end, and I think, you know, you assume he's going to step up and play off basketball. Like, I talked about this rather to matchups with the Grizzlies, where, like, the specifics of the Lakers matchup, I think, worry me a little bit more. But stepping outside of that and just say, like, if you tell me one of these teams is making a surprise run to the finals, I sort of like the Warriors more than I like the Lakers as far as that goes. I think that team has better defensive infrastructure, and I think, you know, and then you add Curry and Butler and what they can do in playoff basketball. I think the Warriors have been really good since that trade, and I think the Warriors are a real threat to make noise in the playoffs if they have Curry, Butler, Green all healthy in the playoffs.
Now making a surprising run, at least for the play-in, the Phoenix Suns. Big win last night. It feels like they have sort of woken up from a stupor a little bit anyway. Thoughts on how the...
Well, Dallas falling apart sort of helped out a little bit.
Yes,
you know?
AD is back, man. AD is back now after last night. So right now, just looking at it here, you've got... They are 10th, and in the play-in spot, they are they're tied with Dallas. Dallas did bring AD back. And, of course, they're only a half game behind Sacramento. Thoughts on how any of that might play out? You assume Dallas is just going to plummet out?
Well, I mean, they are getting Anthony Davis back, so maybe, you know, it stabilizes a little bit. I think either of those teams, I would favor Phoenix to get the 10, and I would favor Phoenix if they get the 10 to have a better shot at knocking off the Kings. It's like I might even favor them to knock off the Kings. It's one game, but like give me one game with Kevin Durant on the floor against, you know, that Kings team. Like I think the Suns are a good bet to get into the final play-in game where you're playing for the single elimination game 4-8. Do I think they're going to beat the Clippers or the Wolves or the Warriors or even the Grizzlies in that game if John Morant is playing. I don't. So I doubt Phoenix is in the playoffs, but I could certainly see them getting to that, you know, that final play-in game.
Did you watch any of the Lakers last night? Did you happen to keep track of what was happening?
I did not. I mean, I kept track of what was happening. I mean, they had their guys, LeBron, Luka, and Austin Reeves, like all played in that game. And they lose at Orlando. They give up, I think it was 116, something like that, to a Orlando team that's not been very good offensively. That's the thing with that Lakers team is that the defensive, we're talking about defensive infrastructure, like the Warriors, you know, is better, I think, than the Lakers. The Lakers' defensive infrastructure is not very good. I know they went through a stretch where the defensive performance was good on the floor,
right?
But it didn't really match up with the talent.
Right.
And so I don't really believe it with them defensively when you get into the playoffs. Now, it could be that LeBron and Luka, like, just step up their games and dominate possessions, and, you know, they win anyway. I'm not discounting them. But I don't think that team has the defensive muscle to get through multiple playoff series.
So back to the Grizzlies. They got Utah tonight. Jeffrey says they're favored by 10.5, even without Jack.
That seems like a lot for this Grizzlies team right now.
Seems like a lot. That was our impression. Seems like a lot.
I said it was shockingly high.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Here's one, and maybe this is going to be aberrational because, like, Utah's so big, so Zach Edey may start again. I was interested, so you wrote a piece at the Daily Memphian, which I've tweeted out. People can read it over at the Daily Memphian about the Brandon Clark injury and its both short-term and long-term repercussions. Some of this we talked about yesterday. But interesting, right. How much can Santi and Jaren, well, first of all, how has the combination of Santi and Jaren big been together, and how many minutes can they soak up?
When you get into the playoffs?
Yeah.
I don't see any reason you're not going to be playing Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, Jared Jackson, and probably now Santi Aldama like 38 minutes tonight. Well, you're like, what's the point? With this roster, like, why are you not doing that? And that's what been one of my things all along, and now it's reached the point, like, I've been waiting to write about it until we get closer to the playoffs, but there's been so many hits along the way that I don't know how meaningful it is anymore. But one of the things that jumps out about the Grizzlies rolled up to the other teams in that West mix is the amount of extra stuff you can get from their stars in the playoffs rolling up to the regular season. The amount of space between what they've been doing on a game-by-game basis and what they could do, there's more room there to make up for the Grizzlies than any other team in the West. When you look at minutes per game over the course, you know, average minutes per game of top three players of the Grizzlies versus everyone else, the Grizzlies is the lowest. And so if you assume everyone's playing their stars 38 minutes a night or 40 minutes a night or whatever in the playoffs, there's more extra to get for the Grizzlies. And then their top three have only played 30 games together this season, which is either, and it's not the lowest because some of these teams have changed themselves, you know, since the deadline in terms of who their top three are, but it's among the lowest of the teams. And so I've always thought there's a little extra for the Grizzlies to play on basketball because you get your stars together more often in games and more minutes per game. But, like, I don't know, is John Morant playing or not? And then you have all these other hits around them, so maybe that's not as true anymore, you know?
If we assume otherwise good health, though, all you need is whatever, another 20 minutes from other bigs, other collection of bigs? Is that?
Yeah, and so, you know, you got Zach Edey, you got Jay Huff, you can scale down and play small. I mentioned the Lamar Stevens part. You know, maybe G.G. Jackson works into the mix. Yeah, we'll see, right? I mean, all these options I just mentioned could potentially just destroy you in a playoff game by having them on the floor for 15 minutes.
Right.
So that's kind of the problem. Whereas if you have Brandon Clark, you can say you don't need anybody else.
You don't need anybody else.
You know, Jaren, Santi, Brandon, 96 minutes, boom, we're done. I think the idea of the Grizzlies being better in a playoff context was partly based on that idea. That if Edie's not working, you just don't have to play him. You don't have to play J-Up. You don't have to play G.G. Jackson, right? And now that's changed. And that's the real harm in the Brandon Clark thing.
Like plus those 15, 20 minutes. He is one of the few plus defenders you have on the roster.
Absolutely. So, no, I think the Brandon Clark thing is a huge loss for the playoffs.
Yeah. All right, Chris, I appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. He's not as worried. I'd say of the three of us, he's the least worried about the play-in. I'm clearly the most, but that's because I do that with
you have
everything.
A brand. That's
what I do. No, I go to catastrophe. Mm-hmm. I fear catastrophe, and I see it around every corner. Unless you're selling your house and you call Josh Hysaw, in which case I see glory and riches around the corner for you. Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams Realty, 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147. If you're selling your house, I'm sure you've gotten these, like, people random people contacting you about cash offers, and you know that they're low-ball offers. Well, Josh will, in fact, offer you an instant cash offer for your home, and it will not be a low-ball offer. Wants you to get full market value for your home and will give you up to 4 months to get everything packed, figure out what you want, all of that. It makes it incredibly easy. Just one of the things that Josh Hysaw does for his clients, one of the options that he has for his clients. Again, if you're selling your home, it's Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams Realty, 901-461-8147, or joshhasthebuyers.com. We got Fish on Friday on Tuesday coming up next. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
If you love your phone, but not your carrier, just switch to T-Mobile. You can keep your phone, keep your number, and we'll help pay it off up to $800 per line. You can also use our savings calculator to compare our plans and streaming benefits against Verizon and AT&T. So, switch and keep your phone, keep your number, and keep more of your moolah at T-Mobile.com.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, port in 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Charles Fishman, our man in Washington, D.C. Charles, of course, is the author of 3 New York Times bestsellers, most recently, One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon. Also a 3-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for Excellence in Business Writing and a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand. He joins me now on our secure server. This is our secure connection.
We're on the secure line. We're definitely on. Well, this is the line that can't be tapped because of boredom and repetition.
No.
I
make certain that when I'm talking to DC, that I always use the
you're using one of the
dedicated secure systems that we have set up. Just so what the hell? That was the craziest story. I'll tell you my favorite part of the story. Maybe you have to give people some background. But my favorite part of the story was as they were texting back and forth on a on this text chain, to which they for some reason invited a journalist from the Atlantic. They were sending emojis. That was the one. It was an emoji after they struck the. Is it Houthi?
Houthis.
After they struck the Houthis, what would you do but text your colleague an American flag, a fist, and fire?
Yeah, actually, what's interesting is that literally one of my children texted me in the middle of the night. American flag, fist, and fire emoji.
I'm going to...
Prayer emoji. That's all she texted. Our senior national security advisors are texting each other emoji. So in case people...
In case people haven't heard. Yeah, what happened, Charles?
We are running a military operation against the Houthis in the Middle East to... They have been they have been
disrupting
using
ship traffic in the Suez.
Right, disrupting ship traffic in the Suez, and we've been bombing them in Yemen. This dogged the Biden administration. Our ships were never struck, but they were targeted by this group in Yemen. Trump wants to literally bomb them out of existence.
Right.
This has not worked in the past.
But in fairness, neither has the pansy approach of the Biden administration.
The Biden administration, as I said, struggled with this problem. The problem is that the Houthis are scattered.
Right.
There's no place. They're waiting to be bombed.
Right, it's like bombing Vietnam.
But anyway, we're way off topic.
Uh-huh.
But 18 senior military officials, senior national security officials for the United States government, the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, the National Security Advisor, Mike Waltz, Vice President J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, Tulsi Gabbard, the head of the intelligence agencies, and CIA Director John Ratcliffe, among others, gathered in a text chain to work through whether this was a good idea. Part of the discussion was on this text chain, and when it would happen. There was talk of postponing it, talk of doing it immediately, but they used Signal, which is a private, open source, secure signaling system. So that's problem one. That app, Signal, is banned by the U.S. government for use in U.S. government conversations and business. And it's banned for the following reason. Not because people can hack Signal. What they can hack is your device. Once a foreign intelligence service is in your iPhone or your Android phone, the fact that the apps themselves are secure is irrelevant because they can see what you're typing and they can see what people type to you. That's why it's banned. In fact, you can't load it on. So it's hackable. And because it's banned on U.S. government devices, that means that these people might well have been either going around the ban or using non-governmental devices which aren't protected. That's point one. Point two is they somehow invited the editor of the Atlantic Monthly into the group chat. FYI, that's why you don't use Signal. He must have been on someone's contact list. Mike Waltz, the National Security Advisor, invited him in. He received the invitation. He thought he was being spoofed. For weeks, he thought he was being spoofed. This must be a joke. They must be trying to get me to write something and then make a fool of me. People do this with journalists now. In the end, the Defense Secretary, Pete Hegseth, dropped the entire attack plan, including weapons, timing, targets, and individuals they hoped to kill, into the group chat. And that's the point at which the editor of The Atlantic realized, hey, this Jeffrey Goldberg, this is real. He actually took himself out of the chat once he realized it was real.
He realized it was real. Isn't this true? Because he thinks he's being spoofed here or something. What's going on? Something weird. And then, at least as I read the story,
He couldn't believe people were using Signal.
Right,
invited him in.
Right. Right. So he waited for the attack, and he'd said, all right, I know all this stuff is going to happen like this. If it does, let's see if it does happen like this. And when, as he's sitting there watching the reports
you told this story well. He was in the parking lot of a supermarket. He received the war plan. He said, well, let's see if it goes off as the war plan says.
This must be real.
Must be real. And then he had to check Twitter. And he checked Twitter to discover that in Sana'a, the Yemeni city, there were explosions of bombs from an attack. And that's when he withdrew from the chat. He actually notified his contacts in the national security apparatus at the White House, told them, I don't know how I got. No one ever said anything to him until he wrote the story that landed yesterday. He himself did not reveal any national security information at all. But let's be clear. This was both a failure of the correct procedure, of habit. You don't do this. and it was illegal. And it's very clear if you read what people say, including attorneys who've defended people accused of revealing top secret information, anybody but the people at this level would literally already be under arrest. If you leave a single document out on your desk and go to lunch,
would they be under arrest or would they just be fired? Would they really be under arrest?
Both under arrest, fired and under arrest. You don't reveal national security information. And CNN, if you want to both amuse and horrify you, CNN has a supercut of these exact people, Hegseth, Waltz, Vance, Gabbard, Rubio, talking about how important it is to maintain security and how people who don't need to be punished. They're mostly talking about Hillary Clinton. So it's pretty clear. I mean, this was so dangerous to America. But here's what's interesting. Even the CIA director didn't say at any point during 8 days of conversation, hey, this conversation is totally inappropriate to signal. Let's take it to our secure systems. All these people are so high in the government that they have secure systems on their government phones. They have secure systems installed in their homes. They can sit at a desk in their house and use secure government systems. They have secure systems at work. None of these people, among the highest people in the land, the CIA director, the vice president, the secretary of defense, the secretary of state, none of them said, wow, it's a bad idea for us to discuss war plans on Signal. So it's sort of astonishing.
He told me that he uses Signal for gambling purposes. Just, you know, so it must be.
Now that clears up. Anyway,
One of the things that struck me, honestly, was the Vance. The actual policy discussion here was that Vance is like, I don't want to bomb the Houthis. I don't think this is a good idea because, and this was interesting, like you don't often get a glimpse into the internal discussions, whatever. Yeah. And he says, because this is kind of hypocritical given what's happening in Europe where we're saying, you know, you guys are on your own. We're not, we're focused on, you know, America and you guys should pull your own weight here. We're not interested. It was interesting to see that.
But he also said, Americans don't know who the Houthis are. Why are we need some time to explain why we would do this, which was interesting. The other reason you don't do this, aside from the breach of actual national security, is that, and it's assumed that all these devices are, all the personal devices are hacked. My wife's phone was hacked by the Russians. We had to keep it in a bag until it could be cleansed. It was insane. They said they're listening to what's going on in your house.
So literally your wife's phone was hacked.
Yes, yes, yes. And then it was handed over to a security company by the Washington Post, and they said the Russians had hacked her phone, and they had access to everything, including simply turning on the microphone and listening when the phone was sitting on the counter. So, first of all, who's going to share intelligence with us if the Secretary of Defense is going to drop it in an unsecure chat so that people can read it? A. And B, all records of government actions in the United States are required to be saved and archived so we know who did what. The messages in this chat were set by Mike Waltz, National Security Advisor, to disappear either in 1 week or in 4 weeks. So what's interesting is the reason no one objected, according to what analysts have said, is this is the way they do business all the time. It wasn't unusual. It was part of the routine. And that's a sign of disrespect for the security of the country and for how the country should do
it. Now, in their response, they said different things. But one of the things they said was there clearly wasn't any breach of security because the thing came off famously, beautifully, just as we intended. So shut up.
Right, right. Well, that's of course, ridiculous. If you had hacked in to this system and you're the Russians or you're the Chinese, you wouldn't reveal that you knew that by disrupting this one. I'll be honest, the Houthis don't have a lot of...
It's also true, too, like you can drive drunk and get home and not crash, but doesn't mean it was a good idea to drive drunk.
But if you had figured this out, you would lie in wait to see what you could really learn, because this is low value, but these are the six most important people in the country, except for Donald Trump.
Okay.
So, anyway, Mike Waltz will likely be fired, but really Hegseth should be fired too. He dropped war plans with detailed targeting into an insecure chat, and he himself said, literally,
what happens when you have a DEI hire there, you know, the unqualified Fox News host.
There you go. Pick something fun off.
Okay,
the list
let's discuss. We're going to take a little break, a little breath mint. We're going to discuss bananas. Why are we discussing bananas? I thought we talked about avocados last week, and in the course of talking about avocados, oh, you know what it was? You were explaining one of the reasons why avocados took off in popularity, and one of the reasons was they learned to ripen them in transit, so you wouldn't have to buy a rock hard avocado or something.
And I told you that most bananas.
And you told me that bananas were the same thing.
People are astonished at that. Okay, let's start with how many bananas do you think the average American eats a year? How many bananas? And Jeffrey can always jump. He's good.
No, how many bananas do the average? I'd say 40 bananas. No. I mean, take it down. 32 bananas.
32 bananas is less than one a week. You know that.
I can't tell you the last time I ate a banana.
Jeffrey, have a guess.
I was gonna guess even lower. I was thinking like 25.
Hey, most people don't eat bananas, so you know.
But first of all, I happen to know a lot about bananas, and I know you're gonna love this. First of all, the number one item that people in American grocery stores buy is bananas. Not by cost or by volume. Almost no one checks out without bananas. It's the number one item that is most commonly purchased in American supermarkets, bananas. The average American eats 90 bananas. So further evidence that you guys are part of some weird corner of American demographics and that you eat no bananas.
Two bananas.
I like bananas. When we have bananas,
I'll eat two or three bananas a week before they all go brown. And then, I won't buy bananas again for another month.
How brown do they need to be?
Oh, I don't like. I open them up, and it's really not about how brown they are. That's true. If there's lots of brown spots, I don't worry about it. I don't eat them.
But it's really
the entire consistency of the white part also changes.
Right. You want it to be nice and firm.
Yeah. Right. I don't like a gushy banana, and that happens pretty quickly, honestly.
Well, it depends on when you buy them and what condition you buy them in. In my house, it's just like you. My wife can eat three bananas a week. She can eat a banana a day if they're exactly right, you know, if they're right where she wants them. Each of my kids, same thing. We could easily go through 12 bananas a week if we had exactly the right bananas. We're going to be able to do that. A company called Tropic in Norwich, UK, has adjusted the genetics of bananas so that they don't turn brown anymore. They have turned off a gene inside the banana that makes an enzyme called polyphenol oxidase. Polyphenol oxidase is the enzyme that turns them brown and soft. So
it's not just that they don't turn brown, but they're rotten, but just not brown. They're not deteriorating.
They're not deteriorating.
And if so, why can't they do the same thing for me and my turning brown?
Well, you're ahead of the story. You're always ahead of the story.
Uh-huh.
It even changes whether they turn brown once they've been opened and sliced. They have a picture, and it's possible that Jeffrey will post this. They have a picture with a story showing the regular banana, the Cavendish banana, and the banana that's the Tropic banana. And it's been sliced for 12 hours. You know, the skin gets brown, the edges get mushy, and the one on the right.
Okay, then is that a weirdly hard or something? Are they like?
No. Whatever ripened state they were in, they're in. So this could change things. The estimate is that 50% of the bananas that are grown in the world end up thrown away and left in the landfill.
That's great.
So it's 33% of all produce, and 50% bananas really do. People buy bananas, and you know, in America,
people buy them and throw them away.
Six bananas cost $1.20.
That's what they make banana bread. That's what people do. They make freaking banana bread.
They make banana bread with it. Okay, Tropic is working on non-browning lettuce, non-browning apples, and non-wrinkling Jeff Crockett.
That's
just
beautiful.
Turn off your polyphenol oxidase.
By the way, in terms of genetic, you know, some people, is that scary? Is that a little scary that they do this? But whatever. But I think we can all agree that the single best genetic screwing around with produce is the seedless watermelon. Can we not agree with that? Can we not accept
that? That is absolutely true. I don't know how the seedless watermelon was made, but I, as you know, we count the number of watermelon that we eat because we eat so many watermelon. It's time to start buying them. They're all seedless. Tropic wanted to make clear that they did not add any genetic material to the bananas. They adjusted a gene internally to turn off the production of polyphenol oxidase. They're not otherwise screwing. Okay. So they are, quote unquote, genetically modified, but not in a way that anybody might find scary.
Let me ask you this. Because I am, in fact, still browning as a human, still growing soft, I'm a little interested in my Social Security and in the future of Social Security.
How
confident can I be that things are going to be running smoothly when I get there?
The new commissioner of Social Security is at his confirmation hearings today, and the Washington Post has an incredible, devastating takeout on what the Trump administration and Elon Musk has done to Social Security just in the first 8 weeks of the administration. It's kind of terrible. Social Security, according to the Government Accountability Office, is literally the agency in the government with the least fraud. Maybe 1% of payments are fraudulent. If that, Social Security gives out $1.6 trillion a year to 68 million Americans. 21% of Americans receive Social Security, either old age benefits that they've paid in and are now receiving back, right? This isn't some kind of gift.
Right.
And another 8 million received disability payments or survivor payments. Also, all paid in. You pay in. 40% of seniors in the U.S., 24 million people, rely on Social Security for their main source of support. And they are desperately trying to fire 12% of the staff of Social Security in advance of the new commissioner for no reason. Social Security actually runs very, very lean. Now, there's 57,000 employees. But there's 57,000 employees because Americans call and need help with their benefits. I did the math. They give out $1.6 trillion a year and 57,000 employees. Each employee is responsible for $28 million in benefits. So by my accounting, That's pretty efficient. One person.
Okay, but what did the takedown reveal is already happened with Social Security? That's what I'm interested in, too.
They've fired nearly 12%. They've turned the credit cards to the official government credit cards to have $1 credit limits. That means that 20 call centers around the country, there's no paper and no pens because the credit cards were used to purchase office supplies, and they are not authorized to purchase office supplies without.
Okay, are we? But are we seeing any
only right now
in service? Are we seeing any diminution?
Only 20. What do you mean? Only 24% of phone calls are now being answered at all by Social Security. That means 75% of the people who are 70 years old, or 75 years old, or 80 years old are on hold for 2 hours and never talk to anyone. No one is calling Social Security to have a check.
They're calling to drop the Hootie War plans.
Because they have a problem. This is an example of DOGE breaking something that wasn't broken, destroying a system so they can say, we told you it was broken. But it wasn't broken. There was nothing wrong with Social Security. Social Security, 1% fraud rate, I would say my own credit card spending right here in this family probably has a higher than 1% fraud rate, if judged by whether I think something should have been purchased or not. Anyway, just...
All right, plane. You got a story about a plane. You got a story about a plane. Tell me this.
We're going to wrap up with this one. This one is just crazy. United Airlines flight 198 from LAX to Shanghai last week.
Okay.
That's a 13-hour and 50-minute flight. 2 hours in, takes off from LA, 2 hours in, at about 4 o'clock, it turns around, and lands at San Francisco International Airport instead. The reason? There's 257 passengers, 13 crew. One of the pilots forgot their passport.
No.
They turned the whole plane around because one of the pilots forgot the passport. They landed in San Francisco.
No.
They hung out for 2 hours. They got another crew. I almost... There's no detail.
Well, I wonder why you even, like, you land, you don't have to get off the plane. Why do you need your passport? Just get back on the other plane, fly back the other direction.
No, of course. Pilots and crew exit. They go. They are required to have rest time, a 13-hour flight. You probably can't fly again for
12 hours. Yeah, no, you put them on the thing as a passenger, flying back, rather than inconvenience 200 and however many people.
You have to leave the plane and clear customs in the new country. My question is, and I say this in all seriousness, think of the fuel, 5 hours of flying time out and back, whatever, just insane amounts of inconvenience. What would have happened if he had landed? What would have happened if he had landed in China? Now, it's probably
not that's the reason you know there's an answer other than turning the thing around. They wouldn't have shot him once he landed in Shanghai. They would have put him on a plane to go back.
No, I think it's the opposite. I think it's actually just the opposite. I think United Airlines control at headquarters, I forget where United Airlines is headquartered, called United Airlines base in Shanghai and said, we have a problem. And I think the United base in Shanghai said, if you land, whatever, they'll put him in jail. You won't see him again for a month. Turn around. Don't do this. Don't attempt to land that plane and enter this country with the pilot without a passport. They must have.
I'm with Charles.
I'm with Charles.
I guarantee. Because I think once.
Where was to France? Where was France? Would you turn around?
No. Well, I mean, I think it matters to the country, but I definitely think what Charles is right is I don't think that he said I forgot my passport and then the captain said turn it around. I would imagine there was contact saying, hey, we got a situation up here, and then they were advised.
They did not. It was actually Saturday. The flight was Saturday. They did not just turn. You don't just turn around a plane that has literally 270 people.
I wonder what they told. What did they tell the passengers?
What they told the passengers was, there's been an incident with crew availability, and unfortunately, we need to turn around. They gave everybody vouchers for two meals.
That's pathetic. I would think a free ticket would be
in order.
All right, Charles, we got to get out of here. I'll just text me on Signal. Keep it between us. We got to get out of here. On Twitter or X at C Fishman, you can follow him there. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next.
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. They will be joined by Jessica Benson today, as well as Jason Fitz. Tim Murray will be with me on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Gabe, of course, today after us. Jeff will be with him at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. We will be back tomorrow for Our Work Is Done.